the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show. I'm Paul Weimer, and today on Signal Boost, we have Elsa Schoenesson-Henry and Dominic Parisi here to talk about their new Uncanny Magazine Kickstarter. Please say hello.
Hi, I'm Elsa.
Hi, I'm Dominic.
So, the both of you are part of this new Kickstarter for Uncanny Magazine, Disabled People Destroy Science Fiction, the fourth year of the Uncanny Magazine Kickstarter. And why don't you tell me how and why Uncanny decided to do this for their fourth year and how the two of you got involved in that?
Well, I was brought on as the guest editor-in-chief of Nonfiction, and basically my job is to make sure that Disabled People Destroy has really great essays for everybody to read. We're currently running the personal essays during the Kickstarter that have been selected by the guest editor for personal essays, Nicolette Berishkoff, and Dominique.
I was brought in as the editor-in-chief for the fiction side and also supervising the poetry. Essentially, I'm going to take over everything in terms of fiction, and I'd worked a little bit with Uncanny previously, and they liked my previous anthology, so that's why they brought me on board.
Yeah, they had me do an essay back in February called Act Up, Rise Up, which was about my work as a disabled activist. And after they published that, they basically said, we'd like to bring you on board because we like what you do with nonfiction.
Similar. And we also have Judith Tarr, who's reprinting fiction, and SQU Lu, who is our poetry editor.
That sounds like a great team. So this is part of the ongoing saga of destroying science fiction. So, but most of those previous ones were, I believe, were under Lightspeed's banner. So why did Uncanny decide to take up this banner at this time?
Sure. Well, I know that for Lightspeed, they had been scaling back after they had finished those projects because they'd done quite a few. And I know that previously, Uncanny had expressed interest in doing this particular project, and it got pushed back a little bit, but the goal had always been for Uncanny to take over this particular angle of the Destroy series. So that's basically why it happened. It's just they had talked to the folks at Lightspeed, and overall it was in keeping with their vision for Uncanny and a lot of the demographics that they wanted to include within the magazine. So it was a perfect project for them to undertake, and they'd had some conversations with the Lightspeed folks and had decided to take over.
Cool. So, Dominic, what kind of fiction are you looking to include in this special, glorious, Disabled People Destroy science fiction issue?
Well, I do want quite a variety of fiction. So, despite the fact that it's People Destroy science fiction, science fantasy is still acceptable. Of course, I'll take anything in terms of soft sci-fi or hard sci-fi. One of the broader things is that we've had a lot of conversations about is that I will certainly be encouraging people to write about disability and feature disabled characters, but that is not necessarily a requirement. The only requirement is that the author be disabled or identify as disabled. And then from there, it's how they decide to handle the story.
And who have you lined up already to contribute pieces for the fiction side?
So far we have Rachel Zwirsky confirmed, Nisi Shaw, William Alexander. Those are the three that we've announced up to this point.
Nice. So Elsa, you're handling the nonfiction side of this. What are you looking for in terms of nonfiction pieces for this issue?
So I'm looking for a couple things. One of them is I really want to hear from disabled authors about what it's like to work in a genre that is sometimes not the friendliest to disability. That's certainly the experience for many. And I want to hear about what it's like for them to be in that space. But I also want to hear about what it's like to write as a disabled person, because we all have really different experiences of being a writer and being disabled. And I want to hear about things that make people frustrated. You know, this is destroyed. So I want people to talk about the things that are problematic. If you have a problem with queer narratives, I want to see an essay about it. I want to see how to create world building with disability in mind in fantasy or science fiction. I'm really looking for people to interrogate the science fiction genre with disability in mind. I don't think they're going to be easy essays to read some of the time, but that's kind of what I'm looking for. I want people to problematize the genre and really think about it and challenge our readers. I'm excited to do that.
Excellent. And who have you rounded up so far to challenge readers?
So I've got Alice Wong, who is a disabled fan and writer who runs hashtag Cripplit and hashtag Disvisibility, which are both really great places to start if you want to learn about disability. And then I have Fran Wild and I have Michelle Baker. I'm really excited about what they're doing.
Excellent. So as of the recording of this episode, the Kickstarter has reached its base funding. I believe it's at $30,000 as we speak. So what is the Kickstarter looking for now that you've reached that base funding? What are you looking for as far as stretching and getting more people on board? What will you do with the awesomeness that people who listen to this should expect when they go rush out to back?
Well, if we fund $45,000, we're going to have a hard copy version of Disabled People Destroy Science Fiction, which is really exciting, and I hope that happens, because then I get to hold a physical book with my name on it as an editor.
Yay!
And it's a particular goal, because the previous Destroy series have also been in print, so it's quite a goal for us to have it stand alongside all the other ones, so that in terms of creating discussions in print form alongside each other, it's easier to interact with them in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You want this one to be sitting on the shelf along with all the others.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Excellent. That sounds really good. So I understand there's another side to this Kickstarter with not just the disabled issue, not just year four, but I understand there's a special theme for this year.
Oh, you're talking about the special theme issue.
Yes.
Rawr? Dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs! Why don't you tell me about that?
So it's a shared world issue, which is being written by a number of authors, and I'm actually co-writing a short story with Mark Rustad for that issue, which I'm really excited about. But we're creating our own dinosaur world, and then we're going to write a bunch of stories in it, which will be very, very fun.
Holy crap! That sounds great!
Rawr!
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Rawr! I'm sorry, Raptor Novelist got out.
I think listeners can forgive us for having unleashed the dinosaurs upon the podcast. So what else can you tell listeners about what else they can get as far as backing this Kickstarter and what they can expect from Uncanny in this coming year, besides all this coolness we've already talked about?
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about just sort of the work that Dominique and I are doing together. It's been a really great process to start working with him and to get to know each other, because it's been a really collaborative process, talking about what we're looking for and what we want this issue to be on a level of everything talking to one another.
Yeah, like, we play off each other a lot. Like, we've had a lot of discussions. Like, Elsa's working on the nonfiction primarily, but we're very open about talking to each other in terms of specific themes that we're looking for. Or, like, she mentioned queer narratives earlier, and we've had conversations where I won't actually prevent disabled writers from writing queer narratives, but I absolutely don't want them done in the traditional way. Like, if someone were to do that, it would have to be looking how it's traditionally handled and then exposing the problems with that. And that's something that you can do not only in nonfiction, but also in fiction. So our ideas are bouncing off each other all the time.
And it doesn't feel like we're in each other's business so much as it feels like we're working together to build a cohesive issue.
Yeah, and in terms of your other question for, like, some of the things that can be offered, like, both of us are offering, Elsa, I think you're also in that, for, like, critiques.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of other very talented writers and editors and critics who are also offering, in some cases, story critiques, novellas, novelettes, and
sensitivity reads.
Novels as well. And yes, your sensitivity reading, if you want to talk about that.
So I mean, I have a sensitivity read up on the Kickstarter, and it's basically, if you want me to read your book that is, or your short story that is currently featuring a disabled or deaf or deafblind protagonist, I can sit down and read it and talk to you about where some of the pitfalls might be or what you're missing, because for many able-bodied writers, you may not know what the little things are that shape a disabled life in the same way that a person with that disability has. So that's one of the rewards that we're offering as part of the Kickstarter. There are a couple of sensitivity reads that are available.
That sounds great. That's, I believe, at the $175 level. For those backers that want and need that sort of feedback, you're willing to step up and provide it for them. Excellent. I see as of this writing, one person has already taken up this offer, but the only, as of the recording of this, they may be gone by the time this drops, listeners, but at least there's still two people that can possibly get in on this action, so.
I was going to say, and of course, they also offer, like, autographed books of a lot of different writers. Like, there's a huge selection. So that's frequently for a lot of people who want to back those kind of projects and they want something physical. Like, that's one of the nice options.
And there's bespoke fiction.
What's that?
So Rose Lemberg and Judith Tarr have both offered basically a reward at $250 where you can talk to them about creating a piece of writing that you sort of direct.
Oh, really? Wow, that's exciting. Wow, they're just looking at this list of stuff. In addition to the magazine, you can get all sorts of possible things to help back on pain. That sounds really good. I like this a lot.
They've been doing it a while, so they do try to have like a variety of offers for people because they know that people do want to frequently back those kinds of projects, but they don't always want the same rewards, especially when it's people coming back for like a fourth year.
And if you have $10,000 to spare, you can get your own convention.
Wait, what? Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Uncanny Con. Yeah, I don't have $10,000 to spare, but perhaps some listener of this podcast might have $10,000 to spare for an Uncanny Con. That would be quite the reward. Wow. But for as little as $5 for you can get the disabled people destroy science fiction special issue and one back issue of Uncanny. So there's pledging from $5 to $10,000. So is there anything else the two of you would like to talk about this issue that listeners should know that if they haven't already gone and clicked and backed it by this point to push them in that direction?
Sure. I mean, I think we're doing something that hasn't been done before. We're doing, a special issue that's, about disabled people, and this is the next step in the Destroy series. So I would say that if you're looking for a new perspective on disability that you haven't seen before, we're lining up great authors, and we're going to get more, and, it can only go up from here. So I think if you're interested in that at all, it's a great project to back, and from my perspective, this is the project that I've wanted to do and I was dreaming about, and then I got asked to work on it, and I was like, oh, okay, well, so now what? Now I have to make this thing a reality, so I'm working extra hard to make sure that the thing that I had hoped and dreamed I would get to work on is the best thing I can possibly turn out as an editor.
And it's the same, it's just the entire project is something that everyone involved on every level is extremely passionate about because it's something that we've wanted to see. And I think that not just us, but that people in general need to see, because these projects, every single one of the Destroy projects, is never considered, I don't ever consider them a solution to a problem. I always consider them an opportunity for something. Because, like, they're great and they are a conversation point for all of those things together. And then it's something for the industry, for readers and writers to point to and look at and want more of that. Not just at Uncanny, but everywhere else in the field. And unless you have that kind of focal point to look at and to have a discourse around, it can be very difficult for underrepresented groups to find those resources all in one place and to have something to point to that has been successful and that is also enjoyable.
And I think it's also incredibly important for people like me and like many of our writers to see themselves in fiction. There have been hashtags over the last couple weeks, including First Time I Saw Me, which was put up by Netflix, of all things, But by doing this issue, we're not just saying we get to work on it, but we're offering narratives for people who've literally never seen themselves in a short story before. And we're able to give that to a community. So from my end, it's incredibly important to give that to any community, and this specifically disabled community needs it desperately. We haven't had enough of it, and we need it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the point, because a lot of people have been asking us, like, can you point us to certain things? And we can, but the problem is that you really have to look for them in many cases. And that's why, like, obviously we will not be able to include fiction about every single disability. Like, we don't have the space for that. But we absolutely do want to have as great a variety as we can so that people can see that disability can feature in fiction in a very wide spectrum.
Representation matters, and getting as much representation for a underserved slice of our science fiction community is important, and I applaud the both of you for taking charge of this.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. It's really exciting, and I'm super happy to be working with Dominique and everybody else at Uncanny.
So where can people find the Kickstarter?
So if you just go to Uncanny Magazine's Twitter feed, you'll probably find it straight away. And that's just at Uncanny Magazine.
And where can people find the two of you aside from the Kickstarter?
I'm at SnarkBat on Twitter.
And I'm at the Very Original Dom Pakizine, just to make it simple.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about the Disabled People Destroy Science Fiction Kickstarter Uncanny Year 4.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. We love talking about this project, so we appreciate taking the time to ask.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on another episode of Skippy and Fanty Signal Boost. Go check out the Kickstarter. Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show. I'm Paul Weimer, and today on Signal Boost, we have Dave Robinson. Dave Robinson is here to talk about the relaunch of his new podcast. Say hi, Dave.
Hello, Paul. Good to be here, man.
So, you've been a podcaster for a number of years with the Roundtable Podcast. When did that start?
That was back in, 2012. March of 2012, I think, was our first episode. We had Nathan Lowell on as the guest host. And, me and Brian kicked it off just on a whim, really. I'd been listening to the Dead Robot Society, and they occasionally did brainstorms. And I was listening to them on my commute. And I was loving those brainstorm episodes. And so I decided, there's an old actor joke. How many actors does it take to screw in a light bulb? One to screw it in. 1,000 to say, oh, hell, I can do that. That's exactly what I did. I can do that. So I got my buddy Brian, and we started the Roundtable back in March of 2012, and off and on, more on than off, but there were a couple of life events and things that required me to step onto hiatus. But we've been brainstorming stories, bringing guest writers onto the show, and inviting them to pitch a story idea to a veteran storyteller. And then we spend, 45 minutes brainstorming it, trying to find the good stuff and the stuff that needs shoring up and create what we like to call literary gold.
So you always had those two strains of podcasts. You had the meet the person and then bring somebody on and have that person help story dot.
Exactly. The idea was that we would explore the craft of the person, of the guest host that we were, that was going to be in the brainstorm. We'd explore their craft first and get a sense for their aesthetic and their sensibilities. And then the brainstorm, in addition to, helping out the writer who was pitching the story, we'd also be able to get to see that sensibility of craft being applied in the brainstorm itself. And I think, in addition to the creative juice that gets generated during a brainstorm, even if it's not your story, there's still a lot of creative pinging going on. You can't help but engage. It's also something of an education in seeing how these storytellers who have done so much, have written so many stories or screenplays or whatever the guest writers, guest hosts forte was, that have been doing it for so long, how they think, how they engage, where their brain goes. And that helps younger writers in their path find new opportunities to explore their own.
That makes perfect sense. Instead of just them explaining how they do, you actually get to see it live and before your very ears, see them, see how they actually do their thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's been going on. We did, we're up to, I think 111 brainstorms and 111, interviews. Over the course of 5 years, which was no small feat. When we crossed the 100 mark, as I'm sure you well know with Skiffing Fanny, it's a rush. It's like, holy smokes, we've really accomplished something here. And it was awesome.
So now it's 2017 and you're going to be relaunching the podcast under a new name. So why don't you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Well, and honestly, the podcast has been on hiatus for the last several months. I think our last broadcast was in February, because there's a lot that's been going on in my life professionally. And the biggest thing that's been going on is the development of a new story development application called Archivos. And Archivos is a tool for storytellers to not only document the characters and the places and the events of their story settings, but also to define the relationships between those story elements, the connections of location and event, of employment or romance or personal connection, being able to define those. And then where Archivos really shines is in its ability to present those connections visually through three different focused display modes that showcase that network of connectivity. This has been in development since last August, honestly, and we're just getting ready to open it up to a public beta in September. And my attention has been so focused on this project, and it's been amazing. But as anyone can tell you, if you're trying to build something, even with a development team like I've got, it's incredibly consumptive of time. And I wanted so desperately to bring the roundtable back. It's very near and dear to my heart, and that experience is very empowering for everyone involved. But I didn't want to have it be separate from Archivos, because Archivos is it's a business venture. We are charging for access to the software, to the online application. So in order to feed all of those desires, I opted to bring the roundtable into the Archivos framework. And so now it's called the Archivos Podcast Network. And we have the same two discrete feeds of we call them insights now instead of the 20-minute interview. It's called Archivos Insights. And then Brainstorms, Archivos Brainstorms, which is going to be the brainstorm.
Excellent. So you're not changing the format of the show per se. You're really just enfolding it into your new venture.
Exactly. It's a repackaging. Everything else is almost totally the same. We just recorded our first episode under the new brand, with James Sutter, a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. The Pathfinder guy.
Yeah, exactly. The executive editor at Paizo, and he's also the creative director for the new Starfinder role playing game.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, which is releasing at Gen Con. And it was, you know, there were a few, flips and flubs as old patterns tried to assert themselves, cause, you know, we can't call it the Roundtable Podcast anymore if we're trying to rebrand it. But other than that, it was the same experience. Great conversations, a superb brainstorm. And really, I don't know if you've ever spoken to James Sutter, but the man is a creative powerhouse. You just turn him loose on an idea and he's gone. And it was so yeah, we're back in the saddle. We're doing the same framework, the same format of podcast. It's just a different name.
Excellent. So why don't we talk a little bit more about the software and where you got the inspiration to do it, what kind of platform it works on, and what else people can do with it. So why software? What was the genesis of this?
The genesis really, it's really hard to nail down first causes. But I can tell you that there's a piece of software that's out there now called the Visual Thesaurus. And the Visual Thesaurus is this graphic visual interface. I think it's done in Flash, where you enter in a word and the display pops up and there's your word in the middle. And then orbiting that word are all of the synonyms for it. So, you know, for Hero, then branching off of Hero, you see Champion, you see Paladin, you see Sandwich, you see all of the things that Hero can mean, all the synonyms. And then branching off of those are synonyms of those things. And it's an incredible tool. And I remember looking at that and going, this network of association applies across the board. It really just kind of nailed me. It's like, this is brilliant. And it stuck with me for a long time. And as I started firing up the round, as preparing to fire up the round table, story has always been a fascination for me. And the notion of being able to see a story setting like Lord of the Rings or the Belgariad or whatever your literary taste is, to see that laid out in the same way where I could see Aragorn in the middle and then branching off of him, I see Frodo and Gandalf and Éomer and Théoden and all of those characters and the places and the things that really, it seems to me that that is a different way of looking and perceiving the stories that we experience, because reading or watching a movie or a play or an audio drama, it's very linear. And all of the connections and associations happen after we experience that particular event. And those connections, if it's done well, are very strong, and we develop an emotional attachment to them. To be able to see that experiential map laid out, I thought would be not only a powerful tool for people developing stories. You know, I'm writing a book. I know the characters. I've got all these notes and papers and things. I don't know what their connections are. If I could provide a tool to writers to document that and use that to help them see those connections, that would be a benefit. That would be an asset to the community. And then I realized, well, now hold on a sec. What about fans of the story setting? What if, you know, you look at all the wikis that are out there, you look at the fan fiction that's generated by the popular properties out there. This is a tool that allows fans of a setting to experience and re-experience the delight and the joy and that mesh of emotional rises and falls. I use words good. the escalation and declination of action and event and relationship, all of that laid out visually creates a very powerful marketing tool and fan engagement tool. So one of the things that Archivos is going to do is, as storytellers, authors, writers, whatever, put their stories in there, they had the option to make them private or public. If they're public, then the story web and the living map and the timeline, the three main display modes for Archivos, are available to the public to go and see. Plus, they'll be able to embed them into their own website. So if you've got a fan site already set up, we're not going to ask you to send people to Archivos. You can just embed that story web directly into your website and create a new way for fans to engage with your stories.
I see. So it's kind of like taking the old idea of a mind map and melding it with the visual thesaurus and blending in the possibility of fans and others getting to see this work with them.
Precisely. It's very much it's a story map instead of a mind map. It's a story map. And we've even taken it a couple steps further. In addition to those connective tissues between the characters and so on, we have the living map, which takes a geographical standpoint. So you can see a map of, you know, Gondor. And on that map, there'll be these hotspots for Minas Tirith and all of the various locations within there. And the users can click on that and see, this is the detail information about this location. Plus, you can do a search on the map and say, I only want to see the places that Frodo has been to. So you type in Frodo and the map redraws itself with the hotspots only pertaining that have a relationship with Frodo in some way. So you can filter and refine the view of the story setting based on your unique interests and passions of the moment.
So like Google Earth and just picking different layers, except you're using story and character rather than terrain or topography or trap.
Exactly. And I will say Google Maps is absolutely what we're striving for. We're not there yet. Right now it's an uploaded graphic and then pinpoints on top of it. But the concept is very much the same. And then the third pillar of display, we call them pillars, is the timeline. which we're basing off of the timeline.js framework, which is basically a linear progression of events with the past to the left and the future to the right. And all of the events detailed by the storyteller are laid out in chronological order. And if somebody clicks on an event, then there's a pop-up that comes up and gives you all the details. Here's the people that were there. Here's where it took place. Here's a summary. And from there, you can then click and explore all of the components of that event.
How would that work with books that play with timeline and narrative and do things non-linearly?
Yeah, we have discovered that one of the biggest issues, and we're still figuring out how we're going to deal with it, is the notion of time boxing characters and events and things. Like, you know, Aragorn didn't get, you know, Narsil wasn't reforged and given to Aragorn until book three. So an event in book one, you know, the battle at Weathertop, if I set up Narsil as being owned by Aragorn, then when you look at Aragorn in the Battle of Weathertop, it's going to say that he owns Narsil. And that's something we're still working out. That's a programmatic conundrum that we're going to work out. Plus, you know, with time travel stories.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
I didn't even go there. That's...
I don't even know. So right now we're trying to take a very large view of the story descriptions that we're providing. And we're very much committed to making sure that the experience is faithful to the events. You know, we're exploring time boxing. We're exploring using tags, to identify story elements, relevant and germane to a certain book or era. And then being able to filter the display exclusively based on that era or time frame. That's Paul, I will tell you, I've got a roadmap that extends easily 10 years, for what Archivos can do.
So you hopefully have a long future ahead of it. So when you were thinking of opening the beta?
The open beta is going to start on September 1st. And that's when we'll be offering subscriptions to users, either patron level subscriptions, which will basically allow you to see the story settings and engage with them as a member of like the viewing public, or storyteller subscriptions, which are the people that are the IP holders, the ones that are actually putting the stories in there. And from September through December, those are the only people that are going to be able to see and engage with the Archivos interface. On January 1st, 2018, it goes open to the public. So all of those story settings that were developed over the last 4 months are going to go public, and then everyone can start playing with them and experiencing them. We're actually going to do a pre-beta launch at Gen Con this year. We've got a booth at Gen Con, and we're offering attendees 20% off on the subscriptions. And they can, of course, get a hold of it 2 weeks before anyone else. And we'll have demo computers so they can play with it there in the whole nine yards. But that's the basic initial beta rollout and then the public launch for Archivos.
Very cool. Another reason I wish I was going to Gen Con this year. So when are you relaunching this new episode with James Sutter, or is it up already?
It actually went up today. I'm not sure when this episode will drop, but it dropped on July 25th.
So by this time, listeners, you can go and listen to that first rebranded Archivos, and shortly after this episode drops, the beta should be ready.
Indeed.
Okay, so why don't you let the listeners know where we can find you find Archivos?
Outstanding. Well, I can tell you, you can find Archivos at primarily at the website, which is archivos.digital. That's archivos.digital. You can access the podcast directly through there as well, or in deference to the longtime Roundtable podcast fans, I haven't changed the original URL. So if you go to roundtablepodcast.com, you will find the Archivos Podcast Network. You can also find us on Twitter. We are at Archivos Stories on Twitter and at Writers Podcast on Twitter.
Very cool. Thank you so much for coming on to the show and talking about Archivos today, Dave.
I appreciate the opportunity, Paul. Thank you, man.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on another Skippy and Fantasy Signal Books. Go check out Archivos.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Cronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.